I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
By BetMGM, I'm Chelsea Messenger. He's Michael Jenkins. And on the menu for the next hour, we'll start with Thursday Night Football, our best bets in Raiders and Broncos. It's 7:20. Mike Vrabel has been triggering moms everywhere, and not in a good way. You have to hear this quote that he had about the trade deadline. Then at 7:40, we get on to our Survivor plays, which, boy, was it a bloodbath this past week. chaos reigns supreme. Hopefully not the case this week in the National Football League. So, Jenks, I was just thinking to myself, okay, Thursday Night Football, that is on Prime. So luckily, I get to watch it without having to go to a pirated site. Do you like the broadcast on Prime? Because I know that sometimes we go in the weeds with like, hey, you know, we like the broadcast crew. They do a great job from like a technical standpoint. Do you like the crew that they have on Prime with like Carissa Thompson? They have Ryan Fitzpatrick, Richard Sherman, Tony Gonzalez. Is this one of your favorite broadcasts? Or is it just, it'll suffice. It's not my favorite, but it's fine.
Yeah, I think that's how I feel about it. It'll suffice. It's fine. It's cleanly produced. It looks good. You've got different voices on there, but it's very cookie cutter to me, which is okay. Let's get, and look, at the highest levels, you're always going to get something that is clean and something that is professional. So it's just a matter of, do you have the great chemistry? Do you have these incredible segments? And I don't necessarily see that. I see something that is just fine for Thursday Night Football. But I don't particularly think some of the analysis is great. I think some of it is hot take-ish without really any thought. I got really turned off by the whole Russell Wilson thing. I'm like, listen, if you guys are going to sit here and just air grievances personally, then, you know, put that on X. You know, I understand it. And if it's a real take that I think has some, you know, has some sort of significance to it and grounding to it, sure. But if it's just like nonsense, it's like, okay, I don't know what we're doing here. If we're going to give someone a platform just to go off because they don't like somebody, then that kind of takes away from the broadcast for me. But overall, it's fine.
Yeah, I think it's fine as well. But I do think it's missing like a big personality. Mm-hmm. Because, like, you think of these broadcasts and the ones that you really love, like, think about inside the NBA, and it's the personalities that make it. Like, of course, they have the high-level analysis, but, you know, at the end of the day, it's entertainment. So I just feel like the broadcast on Prime, like, the guys are great. It just, there's no personality hire. So I don't know who they would get to fit that mold, but it's just, it could be anybody who used to play in the NFL. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah. No, right. And here's the thing. It's that's what I say, what I mean when I say cookie cutter, which is, look, Chris has done a great job for a long time. And certainly if you look at Whitworth or you look at Richard Sherman or Gonzalez, like all these guys that they have, a lot of times the idea is, okay, we'll get this person has a look, this person has a background, this person did this. And if we put them together, like on paper, this will be great and it will be fine. But a lot of times it lacks that natural chemistry. And there are times, too, it takes time to develop. So when you're putting together a crew for the first time, you know, that can actually grow over time. But I've always said that if you're looking for a great broadcast team, particularly if you're talking about being on the desk, then go with chemistry first. Any other polish can be learned. You know, learning analysis or learning how to, you know, basically craft your response or say, all right, this is how you turn to the camera. This is maybe how long you need to go, or maybe this needs to be tightened up a little bit, or, you know, kind of the logistics of it all, or maybe working on your answers. That can be pulled out pretty easily over time and worked on, but natural chemistry is really hard to replicate, and it's really hard to teach. Sometimes you either have it or you don't. It's kind of like dating sometimes, you know? You can like someone and say, wow, you know, you have all of these different things that are so great and you're going to be a catch for someone, but there's just, on paper, you're awesome, but there's something missing here. Chemistry is really hard to develop.
Right. And it's crazy to me that I feel like Tom Brady's a good example of this, where, like, nobody knows more about football than him.
Right.
You know, nobody is questioning that. It's just people label him as, like, stiff and rehearse, and I think it's because he wants to do such a good job that sometimes he just needs to let loose. So I don't know who like a great addition would be. Like, I think Jason Kelsey's one of the up and comers when it comes to like personality hires, because it is a tough role to fill and there's not many of those guys. They don't grow on trees. So I'm not saying that Prime should have hired somebody else. I'm just saying, like, that's the one thing that kind of sticks with me, is that it just feels like they don't have a personality hire. I know they try to make like Ryan Fitzpatrick like flamboyant sometimes. They're like, look, he has his shirt off. And it's like, okay, that's not a personality.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, you're forcing it a little bit. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Where if it's natural and it kind of comes, or, you know, as part of, hey, this is who you are. I feel like they did this with McAfee on Game Day a little bit, somewhat, even though Game Day, I think, is much better overall. I mean, they have more experience there, and being on the campus provides, you know, a bit of a different feel, a lot of a different feel, actually. But it's almost like you can feel the producers sitting in a room and saying, okay, at the end of this game, how about you pull open your shirt and you show off your, you know what I mean? You can almost see it behind the scenes before it plays out in front of you.
Yeah, it's too produced, like, as opposed to just letting things flow naturally.
Right.
So we'll see. Maybe they prove me wrong tonight, and maybe it's the funniest broadcast you've ever seen. So tonight's menu, we've got the Raiders and the Broncos squaring off. Denver, 9-point home favorites, total of 42.5. You could go the prop route in this one. I know one of the plays that caught my eye, initially, because of the trade deadline, Brock Bowers, I think, is in store for a big night as far as targets go, because Jacoby Myers is gone. And Chip Kelly said that multiple guys are going to have to fill the role of what he had, the role he had on the offense. So Brock Bowers, best player on the team, over 5.5 catches. It's pretty juicy, though. It's -160. So I'm going to have to find another way to play that. But from a side standpoint, and Jenks, I feel like we are usually pretty hesitant to pick sides when it comes to a 9-point spread, because that's a lot of points in the NFL.
Yeah.
But the Raiders, not a good football team. The Broncos have a great defense. But we've seen the Broncos kind of play down to the level of their competition some this year.
Yeah.
So would you take the 9 points? Are you playing a side here?
I think I'm going to lay the 9. I think I'm going to do it.
Ah.
Believe it or not, we're seeing 9.5 in some spots. The Raiders are just so bad, and of course it's number dependent. So you can say, yeah, I know, but can they stay within 9? I just don't know if they can, because their defense is so bad. Like, they've allowed at least 25 points in 5 of their last 6 games. Now you got the Broncos coming in, and also the Raiders are coming off that game against Jacksonville, where that was a really hard-fought game, went to overtime, Jags won in OT, so that's just one of those that just takes the air out of you, where you're probably a little more beat up than you would be otherwise. I know it's just an extra quarter or half quarter of football, but those things matter in the NFL. It's like playing on a short week. It may not seem like a big deal, but an extra quarter of football, an extra couple days of rest in such a violent game, that's huge. And so when I look at the Raiders, I'm also trying to figure out how they're going to score. How are they going to score against Broncos defense, which is a top 5 defense? Geno Smith has not been good this season. And I like Geno a lot. I love his story. There's a reason why the Raiders traded for him so he could work with Pete Carroll again, but he leads the league in interceptions. And so that's a bad omen against this Broncos secondary. I think Denver finds a way to cover.
Yeah, I think you either do that or you separate and isolate the fact that you think the Raiders aren't going to score many points. Mm-hmm. So you can go team total for the Raiders under 16.5. I wish it was 17, but that's -175. Under 16.5 is -125. I think that is a solid play. Or you can go first half. Their first half total is 9.5. So I think, especially from the jump, when you're still reeling to make up for what Jacoby Myers brought to this offense, especially against this Broncos defense, it's been so, so good. Because I remember going into that game against the Cowboys, I said to myself, okay, the Cowboys have a really good offense. If there's anybody who can maybe, you know, keep up with this Broncos defense, it's the Cowboys. The Broncos shut them down. I know that the Cowboys scored 24 points, but most of it in garbage time. The Broncos put up a 44 spot. So I think these are like complementary bets, where I think both could probably happen, where the Broncos cover the 9 and the Raiders don't score too much. But if you are worried about laying a big number, maybe go team totals when it comes to the Raiders. From a prop standpoint, like I mentioned, Brock Bowers, that's the one that just kind of got my first glance here. Is there anything else that you saw where you're like, hey, that's kind of interesting?
I am going to put together a small parlay, I think, here. So I wanted to get Geno Smith to throw an interception because he's been so bad this year. He's thrown a pick in 7 of 9 games. I think he's going to throw a pick tonight. So look at the total. It's a lower total, 43. But I feel like if you're the Raiders, you are going to be playing from behind. And look, let's be honest about what we've seen from Vegas. There's a reason why Ashton Jeanty has not really broken out this year. That Raiders offensive line is so bad. Like, they can't run. Geno gets no pass protection. So I feel like Vegas is going to be playing from behind against the Broncos, which means Geno's going to be throwing the ball against a ton of pressure. Like, Benito's going to be all over him, and he's probably going to throw it into traffic. It's probably going to get picked off. You take that in Broncos' money line, it's minus 109. That's definitely a play for me.
Ooh, I like that. Another way to kind of play the game script here is sometimes you look at the quarterback for the team that you think is going to win, and you hit their passing attempts under. So the line is set at 33.5 for Bo Nix. I don't think they need to throw the ball for most of this game. And we've even seen him go under this number in a lot of games this season. So he's gone under it in 2 of 5. But remember, some of these games, I feel like, have skewed his averages. Like, remember that back and forth affair between the Broncos and the Giants that ended 33-32? He threw the ball 50 times. But that's not the game script that I'm really expecting here. I'm expecting a slower pace game and more of kind of what we saw in that game against the Texans, where it was 18-15 final score. So you could go that route for Bo Nix. He's also somebody who's kind of crafty with his legs, rushed for 36 yards last game. But again, when we talk about games that could get out of hand, those are games that I don't really love quarterback rushing props, simply because why would you risk your body if you're winning a game by double digits? So I don't know. I feel like Brock Bowers is still the better one. I just saw where that one turned to 6.5. So it was 5.5 yesterday as far as catches go. Now it is 6.5 juiced to the under. But if you like the over, it's plus 105. Or you could go receiving yards. It's 64.5. Because here's the thing. It is a very tough defensive matchup against the Broncos, but the targets are going to be there for Brock Bowers. He's the best player on their team. Geno Smith knows this. And when you lose somebody like Jacoby Myers, those targets have to go somewhere. So granted, it's tough to buy a stock when it's at its highest. Brock Bowers coming off a 12-catch game for 127 yards and 3 touchdowns. That's probably not going to happen again because the defensive matchup is much tougher than when you go against the Jaguars. But still, I think the opportunity is probably going to be there. So I think that's why I originally started with catches, because I don't know how many yards after the catch he's going to get. But he's also one of the yards after catch masters in the NFL. So maybe he is the cheat code to at least get you your props against the Denver Broncos. So I think that is the one player that I kind of circled here. What about a total, Jenks? 43 feels pretty low, but if anybody can stifle, you know, the Raiders' offense, it's certainly the Broncos. It's just how many points are the Broncos going to score?
Oh, that's going to be like a 28-10 game, 28-13. Any under hits? Is my math correct? I think it is. Just like right there. That's what it feels like.
Yeah.
You might want to look at, honestly, a Broncos team total. I think it's at 26 and a hook. And I mentioned the Raiders have given up at least 25 in 5 of 6 games. So I think the Broncos can get to 27, 28 against the Raiders, especially on the turf. Tend to get a few more points. I know it's a short week. So that's something I would look at as well if you like Denver, and I like Denver in this game. And there's a lot of ways to actually bet this game. I know it's not the most exciting matchup, even though it's the Raiders, but there's a lot of different props that I like. I mentioned that Geno Smith interception prop. You can put some things together here, but I like Broncos team total as well.
It should be noted, I believe this game is in Denver.
Oh, so is it? Oh, I got that wrong.
Not going to be turf. It will be a little chilly, but still, the Raiders defense equals bad. So I see where you're going there. It's hard for me to trust Bo Nix because he's been kind of inconsistent this year. So I can see it happening, but I think there's other ways to play it. All right, coming up next, we got to talk about Mike Vrabel and this quote he had about the trade deadline. I'm not going to lie, I was a little triggered. You got to hear it. It's next on the Daily Tip.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we are back. It is a Thursday. It is November 6th. And in mere moments here on the show, we'll get to a quote from Mike Vrabel that I saw this headline and it made me a little mad. I was like, this ought to be good. And my inner Karen came out. So we will get to that in a minute. Maybe some Coach of the Year odds as well, because this was surprising to me that Mike Vrabel is now plus 175 to win Coach of the Year, mere 25 cents behind Shane Steichen of the Colts. We'll get into our hypotheses on why that gap has shortened quite a bit. But first, we got to get to this quote. Maybe Jenks will be back in a few minutes, but I feel like I can talk about this 4 hours, so he doesn't even need to be here. All right, so let's roll this quote from Mike Vrabel on talking about what the trade deadline feels like.
Well, first I would say that deals are like being pregnant. You either are or you aren't. There's no like, it's either a deal or it's not. So I don't know how close you can be. I know that everyone worked hard, and that we investigated and looked in and made phone calls, and they... what personnel departments do.
All right, so let's stop there, because as somebody who has been pregnant and somebody who is a mom, why did he even bring this up? Like, if you've never been pregnant, like, why would you be like, this is like being pregnant? It's like me going to say, like, this is like going to get your prostate checked. Like, I don't know how that feels. So, Jenks, when I saw this, I was like, what is he even talking about? And here's the thing, like when you take a test, it can say positive and it can be not true. So I understand the premise that he's getting at, but like, let's pause for a minute here. Like, why is he bringing pregnancy into this?
I don't think it was, I mean, I think it's just kind of an off the cuff comment. But now, had he gone into this is like being pregnant and you struggle and you carry something for months and months and you hope it works out, then I'd be like, dude. Like, stop. What are you talking about? You have no idea. I think the point he was just making is either it's yay or it's nay. The end. But of course, when you mention pregnancy, something that men can't relate to, then that sort of, you know, triggers a lot of people into saying, why are you using this? It's probably not the best example, but I don't think he went into it and described actual pregnancy. He was just saying it's either a yes or no answer. He probably could have used a better example, but it's not like he pontificated on what it's like to be pregnant.
I just don't know why this was like on his mind. Like, maybe, I don't think he's married. Maybe he is. Like, maybe this is something in his family that like they're talking about or something. But it's just weird that that was like the first thing that he thought of. Because wouldn't you just say it's like a pass-fail course? You know, you either pass or you fail. You get a P or an F. Like, there's just two options. So it was just like a weird way to phrase it, but it is one of the very few things that I hold against Mike Vrabel, because I do think he is a damn good coach. And Jenks, speaking of Mike Vrabel, we have had some tea here in Nashville about the pettiness of the Tennessee Titans, and I want to get your take on this. So apparently, according to Rachel Nichols, who reported this on The Herd yesterday, she said that the Patriots were trying to make deals with the Tennessee Titans before the trade deadline for guys like Arden Key, for Tony Pollard, but the Titans wouldn't even listen because they're still mad about the way that Mike Vrabel left Tennessee and the fact that he was going to the Ring of Honor ceremony. And he was doing all this stuff even when he was a Titans head coach and doing all these things for the Patriots. But he played for the Patriots, so I don't understand why they're so mad about that. But let me ask you this. If this was your owner and they were refusing to take trade requests from a team simply out of pettiness, would this be a red flag?
Yeah, I'd be angry. I understand the idea that you felt slighted or maybe you disagree with the decision that he made, but ultimately I don't think those decisions were huge slights. I mean, he played as a part of the Patriots, was a huge part of their championship run back in the day. So I don't think honoring that run or showing support for that legacy you left behind in your fellow teammates is that big of a deal. And ultimately, you might have that personal grudge, but you let him go. Like, you fired him. So you had the ultimate say there. You let him go. But now your primary job, as it always is to be a steward of the team and a steward of the franchise and make sure you make the best moves possible so that you can win. So if you're a Titans fan or you're a fan of any NFL franchise and you are being punitive towards your team and not making them better based on some sort of personal grudge or vendetta, you got to let that go. I mean, we're all human. I understand that. But as a fan, I'd be upset.
Well, and plus it just feels like the next iteration of this beef that they had with Mike Vrabel, because I understand everybody's like, oh, we got fired. He got fired because he couldn't agree with the front office. And there were constant battles between him and some of the decisions when it came to trades, when it came to roster decisions, and he thought that he deserved a bigger say in it. And now that you see the team without him, you're like, yeah, they should have probably kept him and, you know, gave the axe to some people in the front office. So it's just another, you know, sign of the Titans front office just being kind of bad at their jobs. And at this point, Jenks, I feel like we have a large enough sample size. Like, what was that stat that I always mention? It's like been since the year 2022 since the Titans have won back-to-back games. That's pretty damn bad. Ooh. So it's tough as a Titans fan seeing Mike Vrabel succeed with the Patriots. And I just mentioned this off the top. It's wild to me that Mike Vrabel is now plus 175 to win Coach of the Year.
Yeah.
Shane Steichen and the Colts have been the story of the season thus far, but they just lost. And so Steichen is now plus 150, only 25 cents before, or excuse me, ahead of Mike Vrabel in that race. Do you think there is a way that Shane Steichen does not win Coach of the Year?
Oh, sure. There's always a way. Always. I mean, you never know what's going to happen in the latter half of the season. So we're at week 10, right? So we're just right there, just past the halfway point. And we see this all the time in the NFL. There will be a team that starts losing that shouldn't be losing or that didn't lose the first half of the season very much. And then we'll see the opposite. We'll see a team kind of come out of nowhere and start winning. Like, who knows? Let's say the Jags win 4 or 5 straight. Liam Cohen right now is 30-1. I don't know their schedule. I'm not keeping up with the Jags. I'm just saying some team will surprise us. Some team will disappoint us. It's the National Football League. It happens each and every single year. I don't think the Colts are going to do that. Is the possibility there? Sure. Absolutely. Could Daniel Jones regress and suddenly be the Danny Dimes that played behind that awful offensive line in New York? Yeah, it could happen. I don't think it's going to. But there will be one of these teams near the top, and they will falter. Guaranteed.
Well, the craziest part is that both these teams are so kind of parallel. Like, I understand, like, the story has been the Colts, but, like, the Patriots are a damn good story as well. They were not a good team last year, and Mike Vrabel is a first-year head coach with the Patriots. I understand he's coached for the Titans, but you get what I'm saying. So, I don't know. I feel like as far as narratives go, maybe you get a slight bump in New England simply because that's a market that gets more attention than Indianapolis. But it's going to be a race down the stretch. And then let me ask you this. Do you think it's anybody other than those two coaches? Because to me, it does feel like a two-horse race. Mike McDonald certainly has a case out in Seattle. He is 5-1 to win Coach of the Year. And the Seahawks have been a team that have been gaining steam and one of the best teams in the NFC, at least as far as their record goes. Does anybody else win this award? Or is it Mike Vrabel or Shane Steichen?
I think McDonald has a chance. I don't know why I'm so high on the Seahawks. I just feel like when you look at complete teams and teams that have experience, like the thing with the Patriots is this, is that Vrabel has the edge because the Patriots were so bad last year, right? This is a 4-win team. So the fact that he's turned them around so quickly gives him a massive edge. And you can say the same thing about Steichen. The one thing about Mike McDonald which hurts him is that the Seahawks weren't terrible last year. So he's going to really have to go on a run here. But if those top two teams falter, the Seahawks are right there, and this is a very complete team, and that defense is just really nasty. I feel like whenever you're talking about a team on the West Coast that maybe isn't the Rams or Niners, we kind of just kind of push the Seahawks and cards to the side a little bit, especially Arizona. But I think a case can be made for Mike McDonald. And frankly, Kyle Shanahan is sitting at 16-1. I don't think he's going to win it, but he has done a hell of a job with all of the bodies they have lost. Like, that will get lost in the mix because the Niners have been so good, or at least competitive, for a long time. But Shanahan has done a hell of a job, too, because their injury list is essentially a MASH unit.
Right. But this award is also based on, like, narratives. And
yeah, for
so
sure.
It's hard for, like, entrenched coaches to win it. Like, I was just laughing. Andy Reid of the Chiefs is 150-1. Huh. It's wild that I need to double check this, but I'm pretty sure he has never won Coach of the Year, which is wild. You know,
yeah.
For all the Super Bowl rings that he's won, you would think, hey, maybe he should be Coach of the Year. But it's just not the way the award works. Like, usually it is a first-year head coach or a coach that turns around a very, very bad team. So it's kind of an interesting award in that aspect. I'm looking at the Patriots schedule down the stretch, and it does feel like they have a lot of winnable games. But I think the biggest roadblock for them is that, you know, they still have to play the Bills. And do you think it matters if the Patriots win their division? Because here's the thing, like, the Colts are winning the AFC South.
Right.
And I do feel like they're very much in the driver's seat. And you look at their schedule and their two tough ones, I think, you know, for the rest of the season, is they do play the Chiefs on November 23rd, and then they go on the road to the Seahawks December 14th. But other than that, like, their schedule is very palatable. The Patriots have the Bucs coming up next, which they're underdogs in that game. Then they play the Bills December 14th. And that's pretty much it for them. Depends on what we see from the Ravens, because they do play the Ravens December 21st, mm-hmm. but we're not sure, like, what that team actually is right now. But do you think that goes into the mix? Like, if a team doesn't win their division, or do you think it's just wins and losses?
As long as you make the playoffs, I think that's all that matters, ultimately. Just mm-hmm. get in. You know what I mean? Of course you want to win the division. Of course you want, if you can get it, home field advantage, you want all the benefits that come with winning as many games as possible and making that playoff run comfortable. But if you're a team like the Patriots, if you win the division, that's just bonus, right? That's just mm-hmm. cream. That's just whipped cream on top of the sundae. That's the cherry on the sundae, because nobody expected mm-hmm. this. I'm telling you, the Patriots are the Commanders of last year. They are playing with house money. And so anything that they do from this point forward is a surprise. And so if they win the division, awesome. If they don't, just make the playoffs and see what happens. And that's what makes a team like the Patriots dangerous, because when you're playing without expectations, then there's no pressure because you weren't supposed to be here in the first place. So for a team like New England, just get in and see what happens.
Yeah, I will say their odds are pretty short to win the AFC mm-hmm. East, just plus 135. The Bills, of course, the entrenched favorites at minus 175. But remember, the Patriots have already won the first head-to-head meeting of that matchup, and then they get the next matchup at home on December 14th. So we'll see down the stretch. It should be really interesting. Jenks, who do you think wins that division? Do you think it's the Bills, or do you think the Patriots get the Bills when they play in New England?
Nah, I think it's the Bills. The Patriots are getting better, and this is not a facade. They're not doing it with smoke and mirrors, right? They're not, like mm-hmm. last year with the Commanders, I know I keep going back to that comparison, and it wasn't smoke and mirrors, but in the NFL, they had so many games where they were winning at the last second, like they won with the Hail Mary, or Jaden Daniels would throw a fourth quarter touchdown pass, and it was amazing. But it's hard to have everything like that come together in one season and go your way. If it does, you take advantage of it. It was magical. But to replicate that year in and year out is really, really difficult. And then you get to the playoffs and kind of you see teams with that championship experience sort of overcome you. And that's what happened to the Commanders in the NFC Championship game. So I kind of see something similar to the Patriots here, where everything's kind of going their way. Not necessarily that same magic that Washington experienced, but having a very healthy team, a quarterback who's coming into his own, a head coach who has the attention of his team. They're playing together. All of those things are falling the Patriots' way. But at some point, they will probably run into a Bills team that has been there, done that. And so maybe you don't see what you want to from the Bills week in and week out, and their defense worries you. But that experience, having been there, means you can sort of take it to a next level when you need to. And that's what Buffalo did against Kansas City. And so that's why I think in the end, as impressive as the Patriots have been this season, it's still Buffalo's division to win.
Right. I think that it takes another jump. Like, you see the jump from bad team to really good team.
Right.
But you kind of fizzle out when it comes to the postseason, kind of like we saw with the Commanders. Not that they fizzled out. They just met a better team in the Eagles, who absolutely dominated just about you know, everybody. But I feel like it's very, very difficult to go from really bad team to Super Bowl champ.
Yes.
Like, that feels like a jump that should be made at least over 2 years and not one. And that's why I kind of have questions about the Colts and the Patriots. They're good teams, and I do think their success is repeatable, as opposed to, like, a couple years ago, it was like the Vikings and the Giants who won a bunch of close games. But, like, the eye test told you, these are not great teams, and then they got blown out in the playoffs. I don't think the Colts and Patriots fit that bill, but I still think that it's tough for them, the pathway for them to win a Super Bowl. All right, coming up next, we play Survivor in the NFL. Who's winning outright? That is the question next on The Daily Tip.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters: your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
All right. Thanks for starting your morning the best way with us here at The Daily Tip. In a few minutes, we'll get to our Survivor plays for the week. And boy, was it a bloodbath for our Survivor plays last week. So I had the Lions over the Vikings. L, Jinx had the Packers. L, David had the Colts. L, Denton is the only person who won a Survivor play from last week because he had the Rams. So hopefully this week it is a little better. And it makes me so mad that the Lions lost to J.J. McCarthy and the Vikings. And I understand some people really love J.J. McCarthy. Like, Vikings fans, it feels like, will go to war for him. But some of the quotes that he has are just kind of odd. Like, I think it's the accumulation of quotes for me, because we've had some of these over the years. Like, do you remember the quote that he had in college that said, "Better to be a warrior in a garden than a gardener in a war"? And you're like, okay. Like, I guess it makes sense. But what kind of quote is that? And then we saw earlier this season where he talked about, you know, "I really put on that war paint and I just think of myself as a warrior going into battle." And he puts all of this, like, black paint, this eye black all over his face. You're like, all right, whatever, it's fine. He gets into the zone. And now we have the newest iteration. And he has an angry alter ego that he is titled 9, which is his number on his uniform. Very creative there. So he says he taps into this, like, really angry mentality that over the years when he has sat on the bench injured, that he just had this anger, like, bubbling inside. And so he's channeled it into, you know, a constructive way where he channels his energy and he uses his alter ego, which he keeps calling 9. So, like, it screams to me that this is somebody who was coached by Jim Harbaugh, where it's just like, this guy is a weird bird. Like, over time, you're just like, okay, this is not normal. So it feels very fitting that Jim Harbaugh was his coach at Michigan. But, like, am I crazy for saying this? Or do you see some of these breadcrumbs? You're like, this guy is coming off a little strange.
He just seems like a weird guy. Like, when I see his speeches in the locker room after the games, they're fine. Like, you can say anything in an NFL locker room after a game. You'd be like, "We got the win, and Arby's has the meats!" And be like, "Yeah!" You know, it doesn't matter. You can say whatever, because people are jacked up because you won the game. And isn't it perfect that he played under Jim Harbaugh? Like, I can't think of no wonder these guys won a national title. Like, my God, you're the same person. But if you win, it doesn't matter. He's a very good football player, or has shown flashes. I'm not going to crown the guy just yet because of a handful of wins. But yeah, he comes across as just a little bit of an odd bird, which is exactly how I would describe Jim Harbaugh.
Right. And I do think that, like, if it's something that works for you mentally, it's absolutely worth trying if you like to, quote, feed the wolf inside of you. And that, you know, gets you going. Because I understand, like, football is a really physical game, and you do probably have to hype yourself up a bit.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Like, I wonder what he's like when you actually hang out with him, and if he's like this, like, outside of football. Because, again, sometimes you have to tap into that when you're playing such a physical game. But I wonder if he has these type of quotes when he's playing, like, Monopoly. He's like, you gotta feed that wolf inside of you. And he just smashes everything off the table. Like, I wonder if he's this intense in all walks of life.
That's why I just bought Illinois Avenue. Like, okay. It's not that big a deal, JJ. Get out of jail free card. Avenue. Bam!
We Woo! Own them. It's a strange guy.
Park Place, sucker. Like, all right, that's pretty good. When's the last time you played Monopoly?
Did you see where McDonald's is bringing it back?
Oh, are
I'm
they?
I'm not going to lie. I got kind of excited for that. Because yeah. I don't know if you played it like the first time around. That was fun. Like collecting the pieces and trying like, oh, I got it a free large French fry. And I'm one piece away from a PT Cruiser. Which like I was 15 and PT Cruisers are extremely ugly. So I don't know what I would do with that PT Cruiser. But it was exciting.
The PT Cruiser. Wow, I haven't heard that reference in a long time. I remember those. That was around Monopoly time. I had a couple friends that had PT Cruisers. Yeah, the Monopoly game at McDonald's is awesome. That's good to hear.
Yeah, so some good news. And watch out if you're behind the drive-thru lane in front of J.J. McCarthy, because he's going to get all the pieces and claim Park Avenue. All right, now it's time to play Survivor in the NFL.
Two men enter, one man leaves.
There can be only one.
Who will survive?
It's time to put on the war paint. It's time to survive because it's better to be a warrior in a garden than a gardener of war. Or whatever J.J. McCarthy said. All right, Jenks, who wins outright in the NFL this week?
The Lions. Taking on the Commanders. What's that line now? Oh, money coming in on Washington. Look at this. We've gone from 8.5 to 8. Lions favored by 8. Look, I'm not one to, well, I am one to pick against my team when things aren't going well. I had Seattle and Survivor actually in our parlay last week, laying 3. It's just a bad spot for Washington. JD5 is out. Frankie Louvu is out. Everyone is out. And the Lions are in a bounce-back spot. They're going to get a win. They're going to remember last year's divisional game when the Commanders went into Motown and got that win. So this should be, I think the Lions cover. They definitely went outright.
Yeah, I almost play this, but then I was like, are we still playing this game with rules? Because I used the Lions last week. So if we still had some semblance of rules, like I couldn't use the Lions this week. So instead, I'm going to go with the Bills over the Dolphins. I'm not sure if the Bills cover this 9.5-point spread, but I do think the Bills do enough to get the win here. The defense looked so much better in that game against Kansas City. Maybe, you know, it's one of those games where the intensity isn't quite there, but I still think they go on the road and handle business against a Dolphins team that's looked like they've pretty much quit. So I'm going to go with the Bills. All right, next up, we go to David. David, who do you like this week?
I am taking the Panthers over the Saints. It is a straight fade of the New Orleans Saints and Tyler Shuck. Rookie quarterback, not very good. That offensive line is also not that great, and they have maybe 2 weapons on offense. I think Rico Dowdle has himself a game again this week, runs for maybe 550 yards on this defense. Yeah, Ricky Dowdle's feeling himself right now, and I'm just going to ride that. Panthers over Saints.
Here's something I didn't know. The Panthers have a winning record. They're 5-4 this year, which is wild to me. You know, in our household, we're fans of the Panthers and the Titans. I did not see the Panthers wiping the floor with my Titans when it comes to record, but there the Panthers stand. All right, Den, you're anchoring for us here. Who do you like in Survivor?
I'm stepping out of my comfort zone. I'm wading into uncomfortable waters across the pond. I'm going to Berlin, and I am putting my money on Daniel Jones. I'm uncomfortable doing this, This new version of Daniel Jones is still a little odd to me. I don't know if it's real. I don't know if it's fake. What we saw last week against Pittsburgh is kind of sparking the uncomfortability. I'm hoping that that was more of a flash in the pan, and what we had seen the rest of the year is real. So I'm going to take the Colts in a bounce-back spot over the Falcons.
Can I ask you this about the Falcons? Is that, like, I feel very nervous going against them or betting on them because it is a team that feels very volatile to me. Like, one week they'll look good and they'll beat the Bills, and then the next week they get boat raced by the Panthers, who I just said have a winning record, but still it's the Panthers. So, like, do you have any of that nervousness when it comes to the Falcons?
I am very nervous about that as well, especially because Drake London went crazy last week. I'm hoping that one of the many cornerbacks on the Indianapolis Colts who are good, and probably not Sauce Gardner, that feels early to just slap him on Drake London immediately, but they got a bunch of guys in the backfield, the defensive backfield, so I'm hoping that they will be able to stifle him, because as well as Daniel Jones is like playing out of his mind this year, defensively they've been pretty stout as well.
Yeah. And overall their offense is good. Like, it's not just Daniel Jones, it's Jonathan Taylor, and especially when you go overseas, I feel like the game plan, I don't know, maybe I'm speaking out of turn here, it feels like you would rely more heavily like on the run, you would simplify things a bit, but I don't know, maybe it's different. I have never played an overseas game in the NFL, so maybe that is a crazy thought. But again, Jonathan Taylor's having a great season too, so it's not simply on the shoulders of Daniel Jones.
Yeah, agreed. I'm with you. It's not all on him. He's got other players, and he's got a good head coach. I don't know what to think about the Falcons. Falcons have disappointed this year, I feel like, relative to expectations thus far.
Yeah. Well, I feel like I never trust them. Like, they feel like a team that can have all the potential in the world, and even, like, on the number side of things, like, the Falcons have a good defense.
Yeah.
It's just they can't seem to string together a consistently good season, but you could probably say that about a lot of teams in the NFL. Like, it's wild to me that there is no team that's just straight up dominant. Like, every team this year has really had their flaws, which makes things in turn more interesting because it feels like, you know, there are more teams that could maybe win the Super Bowl, but I don't know. We'll probably get to January and be like, nah, there's like three teams that can win.
Yeah, I'm the same way. But actually, I kind of love that, though, because this is the, I don't want to say the first time in a while, but every year in the NFL when you have these stories that kind of come out of nowhere, where before the season you would never have expected the Colts to be a factor or the Patriots to be a factor or even in the NFC for it to be so competitive just top to bottom, like the NFC North is crazy where every team can beat one another on any given week. That's what makes the NFL such a sell each and every week, even if we can't watch it.
Yeah, but we can. You can find ways, Jenks. I gotta send you those links, brother.
Yeah, you do.
But just make sure it's not on your own personal computer because it can be damaging. Have a company computer.
Right. Your computer has been infected. I'm like, I don't care. It's not mine. Click.
That's fine. That's Odyssey's fine. Problem.
Yeah.
All right. Coming up next, Sour 3 of the show. We'll start by talking more NFL with Sam Berukas from Sumer Sports. It's next on the Daily Tab, presented by BetMGM.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.